Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Moved into a 15,000 square foot building. March 1st will be 2 years. I'm using 6,500 square foot of it and leasing out the rest of it, with the exception of another 1,500 square feet I decided to use for massage therapist, an acupuncturist, and a mixed martial arts program, and run all the like the fitness kickboxing through things like that.
Sure.
As far as my martial arts background, I've trained mostly in Taekwondo. I started back in 1974 in Pailung Kung Fu. I've taken some Singing Kung Fu, some Bakuchung Kung Fu. I've trained in three different styles of Taekwondo, mostly in the World Taekwondo Association, which is a Chung Dequan background. But I've traveled about 25 to 35 different places each year for many years, I guess about 7 years, somewhere in that area, up to about 2.5 years ago, training under a lot of different people in different styles. And at my school, I teach mostly the World Taekwondo Association style. And I add in a lot of things I've learned over the years. You know, it's just I stay with the forms from that style. And
sure.
The kicking, types of kicks and so forth. But I added in a lot of the boxing, the kickboxing, the Muay Thai, the Kung Fu stuff. So, you know, I got a pretty versatile class. And,
sure.
This school I've had now... This year should I'm going on my 14th year. Yeah, 14 years I've had the school. So,
wow, yeah, that's fantastic. You know, there is a huge range, obviously, of members in the NATM organization, and you know, some school owners are brand new, just starting out, and you know, in backyards and basements, and some are like you, very established, very have a huge amount of community involvement and community presence, and goodwill in the community. And I think, you know, obviously, especially for the guys that are in the middle, you'll be a great example for them to follow with some of the things we may talk about in very soon, and how to sort of, you know, dig roots in the community and get involved in things that are happening around you to sort of create that goodwill rather than mm-hmm. just kind of hope it happens all by itself.
Right.
Tell us a little bit more about your building as a little bit of an aside. How did that sort of come about, you moving into a facility that you decided to own? How did that sort of evolve for you?
Well, I owned a construction company for 20 years, and my family has been in the real estate business. I grew up around that, and I did a lot of commercial work, and my school had outgrown the building I was in 3 years before I even found this one. And the fact is, 2 years before I even negotiated the building, I saw it. Being a contractor, I knew it was a Harley-Davidson dealership, and I was looking at some property to build my own building, and I found out that the Harley-Davidson business bought the lot next to the one I wanted, which fell through. The guy sold it a week before I got to him. So I went back to the Harley-Davidson dealer, and I talked to the owner, asked him what his plans were, when he's going to be moving out. And he said, oh, we're not doing anything for at least 2 years, which, hey, I need a building now. That won't work. The building that I'm in now, I liked because the whole front of the building is glass. Windows are on an angle. Every 8 foot, they're an angled window, which is very attractive. And unfortunately, I thought, no, there's no way. I got to be in a building before 2 years. And ended up, I negotiated on probably 20 different buildings. Everything fell through, or they didn't want to drop in price, or something happened. It didn't work. And I called the owner back, asked him, you know, what his timeline was. They had the building structure was up, and I ended up negotiating with him, and I am purchasing the building with at least the option to buy. So I've got kind of the best of both worlds. I'm leasing, but I'm also paying for it, and I'm also in charge of it, and I can lease out what I don't use to supplement what I have. So I have got a big school at a small school price.
Sure,
you
sure.
Know, smaller.
With some equity built in for the future.
Right. Now, that all my plans didn't quite go as I wanted. Right before July 5th, it'll be 3 years, I was in a head-on collision. And it was after I already negotiated the building and everything was already finalized.
Yeah.
So owning a construction company, I already had all the contractors lined up. I had my schedule of work that I was going to do personally. That kind of really threw a wrench into everything, because my lower leg hit the dashboard and smashed my leg in towards my hip, and it tore my ACL completely off and ripped my my meniscus, and I damaged both my shoulders. So when I started the renovations, I was on crutches, and it went a lot longer, cost me a whole lot more money. I didn't do as much as what I had planned on doing, and in the meantime, I didn't walk in my school for at least 2 months. I was out
right.
completely, and I lost a lot of students in that period of time because
sure.
it wasn't in the plan.
Yeah.
And so all things, you know, all that happened. Now I'm just kind of like a year or so behind schedule.
Yeah.
I am just getting my building leased out. I've got one more space left, and I've got everything leased that I'm going to lease. So we're getting there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, absolutely. And you know, if I'm a school owner, and, you know, this all kind of sounds like Greek a little bit to me, and I maybe have the vision one day of owning a building, but I'm not a construction, you know, executive. I don't have a construction company. I don't have that knowledge base. One of the fantastic things about our organization is that we have all sorts of resources. And
exactly.
People like you, Chuck, and people like Chris Hearn, a really good friend of mine, who's he did $3 billion. That's billion with a B. He did $3 billion last year in owner-occupied commercial real estate financing for small business owners.
That's great.
And have resources like that we can bring to the table. So if I'm a small school owner, or an owner who is established in a community, and I think that maybe I would like to, you know, build a future for myself with commercial real estate, or with the building that I'm teaching out over, maybe a new building altogether, there are resources available for you here at NAMA, and it's a fantastic thing to be able to do, and something not to be afraid of. I mean, there's a lot of issues. There's a lot of construction issues and legal issues and a million things, but we have a support structure. We have lots of people in the industry that we're friends with, that we have great relationships with, that can really help you with these sort of things. So I think that's a great lesson for everybody. Even if you're not a construction executive, you know, we have lots and lots of people and lots of resources that we can really help you facilitate those types of things. So I think that's great. Let's move on to the next topic. Really quick, one of the things for everyone listening, obviously, one of the things in our inner circle group, in our mastermind groups, is we really focus a lot on the three things it takes to really grow a business. And there are really only three things in a martial arts school that you can do to build your business, to grow your business. Number one is enrolling more students. Number two is keeping your students longer, therefore creating more longevity in the revenue that they bring to the school. And number three is increasing the transaction size, increasing either the tuition amounts or the total student value so that a student is worth more to the school in financial terms. And, of course, whenever we talk about financial numbers, whenever we talk about financial concepts, it's very easy for a person to let themselves think that the only thing we're interested in is money, Well, when really it's the opposite. The only way you can demand higher prices, the only way that you can retain students longer, and the only way you can enroll more students is to have an amazing product. And one of the criterion for all of our members of the Inner Circle group is we have to absolutely understand and believe and see through evidence that they have a fantastic product. And I have to tell you, everybody in the group is very, very, very focused on high-quality student outcomes. Chuck, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. In fact, I was just going over my stats. How's this for retention? I looked at 4 years back. In 4 years, I had a 45% retention. What does that equate out to a month? That's about
Years, that's fantastic.
That's four years. So that's about 1.2% dropout.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. If there is a standard in the industry, which of course there isn't, but what we see on average at NAPMA, just through consulting with schools and meeting everybody, is probably a typical martial arts school in the U.S. drops out around 10 to 11% a month, which means by the end of the year, you know, you're probably at 100% turnover. Some could define that as a 50% retention rate in 1 year, and you have better than that in 4 years. So that's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's well, one of the things, you hit it right on the nose in the very beginning as far as quality of class. I'm very, very, my background is in engineering. I was an engineer for IBM. I worked for two research and development companies, and it's all about statistics. And with IBM, it was all about the customer satisfaction. They weren't satisfied with 100% satisfaction. They wanted higher. So
sure.
That was drilled into me when I worked for them. I was 9 years. And that's the way I ran my construction company. I had 34 employees. I closed down on my 20th year anniversary to go full-time with the martial arts school. And that's what I look at with my school, the Tony Robbins, Kenai. Constant,
yeah.
Never-ending improvement. And I've, if you want me to, I can go into some of the things I did in the area here to get myself positioned.
Absolutely. That was what I wanted to get to, was the sort of the next area that we want to discuss is there are only those three things that you can do to build a school. Number one, get more students. Number two, increase your retention, thereby keeping them longer. And number three, increasing the relative value to the school in not only dollars and cents, but in referral opportunities and in activities and in participation. So the number one area that we've been focusing mostly on with our group thus far has been in marketing. And you had some really creative, interesting marketing concepts that you've been, you know, sort of experimenting with and testing and tweaking in your area in the last few years. Why don't you tell us about a couple of them?
Well, I'll tell you about the one which I did post. Well, I'll get back to that. But one of them is I have my own bottled water with my label. And I use my colors at my school is red, white, and blue. And the bottles I use are blue. The label has red, white, and black. And it has my logo with a dragon, Crohn's Taekwondo School. And I donate a lot of water. I donate it to every fire company in the area, every police department, every event that they do, every non-profit organization in the area, every single school in this area, every event that they do, I'm donating water to them. And there's many times, hey, I got your bottled water. I saw your bottle. I hear this a lot. Now, out of the bottled water, I've already picked up about 4 or 5 students this year, which if you think about it, a year, 4 or 5 students is not a lot. But considering the fact that I only pay a small amount for the water, let's see, if I gave out 60 cases of water, that's around $400 and some dollars. So 60 cases, it gives me one student, that's more than covered. And
yeah. And also for everybody listening, by the way, we're only in February, so it's not, you know, we're not at the end of the year while we're recording this. So
yeah.
So you pick up 4 or 5 enrollments in 4 weeks, in let's say 6 or 8 weeks, just from the bottled water promotion, which maybe cost you $400. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, and the thing of it is, what is another thing that a lot of people forget and this is what's really built me up and really got me to where I'm at, is recognition. My bottled water is out there. It may not sell a student, but it is in front of their face. They're seeing it over and over. Years ago, I owned a commercial art business for about 13 years, and it was branding. That was my biggest thing with my customers. You got to brand, and you got to get yourself to the point where people know you. It's just like any song you hear. I've heard this on a tape somewhere I listened to, but Tony Robbins, a Winston Taste, you know, the old commercials, Winston commercials, anybody heard any old commercials, you're going to recognize it whether they finish it or not because they heard it so much. Well, in my area, I made sure I was involved with as much as possible. I coached T-ball. I helped with the schools. I wore my T-shirts everywhere that says Crohn's Taekwondo School, my jackets everywhere. I am very big on doing apparel at my school, and I give it out. I mean, people wear that. I hear a lot. People said, man, I see your shirts everywhere. I see your name everywhere. So that part of that bottle is that name recognition. It's not that it sold something. It's now I do an ad offering something, and they see the ad, it's a familiar name, so they buy. Now they're calling. Now they want to know about the classes. But another thing I did was I started early on partnering up with some teachers at the schools, the local schools, and started volunteering and doing things with the local schools. I started that back in 1990. And I ran, for my instructor, I ran three schools for him. So I had a little bit of previous experience before I had my own school. But at this point in time, the high school I was talking about right next to me, this year, the number one student is one of my instructors. Number two is one of my instructors. Last year, the number one, number two, number three were three of my black belt instructors. Number four, number seven, number nine, number 12 were brown belts of mine, graduating students. The year before, the same thing. The top students were mine. The musicals, any kind of special event, the leaders of those events are my students. So I've worked on the quality of the school. I really push education. I was education coordinator for my department in IBM in my division. So, you know, I'm very strong on education. I feel that, you know, these kids need to just get the right message and get as much education. And I tell them that you can do anything. And I don't tell them to focus just on one thing. In the past, it used to be you got a job with a career in a company and you stayed there all your life.
Right.
That's not the way it is nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
You better be very versatile. You better be very marketable, which is what I tell my students. You have to be very marketable. You cannot just be a one career type of person. You know, one background, and that's it, because then you're stuck. You're not flexible. So
yeah, absolutely. You know, let's stop you there and let's recap for just a second.
Yeah.
You said a couple things I think that are really, really important, no matter what the size of my school is. And if I'm a small school and I'm the only guy there teaching and all that sort of stuff, and I'm a one-man band, or if I'm, you know, a multi-school operator and I have 65 employees or 100 employees, whatever the case may be, what you said is universally applicable. You know, getting involved in the community in any way, shape, or form that you can is in almost every case, highest return, lowest dollar investment activity you can do.
That's right.
Now, what normally happens in a martial arts school is when you start off as the one-man band, you're typically very capital constrained. you typically don't have a lot of, you know, cash flow to throw at problems, and especially marketing problems. So your time becomes your most valuable commodity in your marketing activity. So the more you can get involved in those things, yes, it takes time, and yes, it takes a lot of sweat equity, but that's one model, is lots and lots of sweat equity and lots of manual labor. And then on the other side of the spectrum, as the pendulum starts to swing and you start to generate some cash flow and you start to generate good student numbers and things like that, then you start to free up some marketing capital where you can start replacing some of the hours that you've been spending in these outreach activities with paid advertising. Now, unfortunately, what we see a lot is making that transition too aggressively and too early. And what I mean by that is you'll have a school that does 150 or 175 students, and they start doing decent gross numbers, $20,000, $25,000, you know, $30,000 a month, something like that, maybe 15 to 28. And all of a sudden, the owners extract themselves or extricate themselves from a lot of community involvement activity and a lot of the high labor stuff and try to replace all of it with paid advertising when that never works. You know, paid advertising never will draw as deeply as, you know, very, very deep roots in the community do. Now, let me go back and kind of recap what you said. Your water bottle idea, which, by the way, I think one of the things that we talked about in the group was to figure out how to incorporate some type of an offer right on the label of the bottle, which I think will help you bump up your response on that as well. But
right.
But your water bottle idea, as I recall, was a solution to you getting some resistance from some local groups not being able to get involved with them. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yeah. That was one of the issues.
So you were trying to do like a program with, let's say, an elementary school or a daycare or something like that, and you got some resistance. So you, yeah, instead of like just giving up and throwing in the towel, you kind of tried to find another way around. Is that about right?
Right. What I did was I went in and said, look, you have an event coming up, and all your people that are donating to you, you're asking for $300 a piece. How about if I give you 60 cases and you sell each bottle for a dollar? That's, you know, so you're going to make the profit off of that. So that right there is over $1,400. And I said, I'll give you those cases of water. You guys sell that water, and you don't have to give me anything. I don't need to, you know, I'm not going to stand here and stand at your door and keep bugging you. I don't have to, because as soon as I do that, they take the water, they sell it. I raise more money than anybody else that donated anything to them.
Yeah.
It only cost me the cost of the bottles. Now they're coming back to me asking me to be involved with them instead of me going after them.
Yeah, and you know what that concept is universally applicable.
Yes.
It's a win-win scenario. What can you do to create a win for the organization and a win for you? And sometimes, you know, martial arts owners, by and large, are not salespeople, right? We typically don't want to perceive ourselves to be salespeople. We, in fact, in many cases, just through, you know, our experiences at NATLA, we sort of have an adverse reaction to being perceived as a salesperson or to even, you know, do sales training and things like that. Well, what you've done is taken yourself out of the role of trying to sell them on something. And here you're providing them with a service that they win because they make money, you know, and they get the value-added service that they would have had to go pay for somewhere else. And you sort of get the win where you're getting their message out, or they're getting your message out. So I mean, it's perfectly congruent. Have you ever had any negative feedback on anything?
Only like one time. Only once. And it was really stupid. The woman said she had spoken to some Korean lady, and she told me that this dragon means evil.
Oh, jeez.
And, you know, it's like there was no – I didn't even follow up with it. I just let
it
go.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. And what I mean is, you know, of course, yeah, you know, you've got to prepare yourself for that, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would expect that the school administrators would be just thrilled.
Oh, yeah.
And teachers would just be ecstatic and, you know, maybe even crack a half a smile and say, oh, this is a really good idea, You know, I mean, I think it's a brilliant, brilliant marketing strategy. And then the second thing you said was you've made a personal commitment to for yourself and for your staff to be involved. And that's something that, you know, many people I'm sure know that I'm a Maha Karate regional developer. And one of the things that we've always done in Maha Karate is we made the commitment a long time ago. You know, you're a big Anthony Robbins fan, and so am I. And I'll tell you a really quick story about Anthony Robbins for our listeners who may not know. Anthony Robbins did this project, and I can't remember the name of the project off the top of my head. Chuck, you may remember, and you can fire it in there. But he took, I believe it was seven inner-city kids, seven inner-city youths who basically, statistically, didn't have a chance, right? These were minority African-American males who were, I think, 15 years old, who had already been in trouble with the law, who were failing out of school, and who basically had, you know, no home life to speak of. Basically, the statistical worst-case scenarios. Right? So he took these seven kids, and he does it, as far as I recall, he still does it every year, and he takes these seven students, these seven, you know, high school students, high school students, and I think when they're a freshman, and sort of makes a deal with them. And the deal is something like this. I may butcher up some details, but I'm relatively certain of the structure. The deal is, as long as the average or above, because he doesn't feel that there's a reason to be average, so as long as they maintain a B average or above, and as long as they, you know, basically stay out of trouble, he'll pay their way all the way through college, pay them a housing stipend, and also make sure that they're taken care of through their high school career. As long as they do those other criteria, as long as they meet those other criteria, and in addition, do 40 hours of community service a month. So 10 hours of community service a week. And Robin's concept on that, his philosophy on that is, learning leadership skills is fundamental to, you know, entrepreneurial survival in the world, right? But it's also the best way to learn service. And the best way to learn service is by experience. And service teaches you to put other people's needs in priority to your own. And that creates leaders. That creates leadership skill-focused people. And he's had a phenomenal record. I think it's in the upper 90 percentile of the students he sort of adopts end up graduating from high school, graduating from college, and he, in fact, in many cases, employs a lot of these people in some of his companies in executive roles. So that's one of the things that we did a long time ago on Maha Karate, was we made all of our staff people, when they sign up to become staff people, when our instructors become instructors, and when our leadership students move into the level of third-level leadership, we require them to do the same thing. We require them to do community service every month. And we require that of our staff as well, and I require it of myself as an owner. So you're really teaching by experiential learning, right? You're teaching by experience that you have to be involved in the community. You have to help other people who either aren't as fortunate as you are or who have needs that you can help facilitate, right? And it's been one of the best things we've ever done. Number one, from a leadership standpoint, all of my instructors, all of my staff members really feel grounded in their community. And they walk into Walmart and everybody knows them. You know what I mean? They see 10 people that say, "Hey, Mr. Jones, how you doing?" You know, that sort of thing. Not necessarily students, but, you know, teachers and principals and city council members and board members and things like that, those types of things. And then in addition to that, it's obviously a marvelous marketing activity. All of our instructors are intimately involved with their school advisory councils and in elementary schools and in high schools and things like that. So I think what you said about that is an extremely important lesson for anybody, you know, listening to the call. How can you help them? You know, you've got a bunch of people that are prospective students that go to the YMCA or that go to the youth center down the road, or that go to the park and rec department, or go to the private school, or that go to the Catholic school, whatever it may be. So instead of walking in the door thinking about what they can do for you, why not, you know, do what we're taught as martial artists and try to help them solve one of their problems? What can you do for them? And I think you illustrated a couple of great examples of that. I think that's perfect. What else do you think, Chuck, has been like your biggest breakthroughs in the last maybe 12 months to 24 months? Many school owners in 2007 had a very challenging year, and you know, we're looking forward to a fantastic year in 2008. But what do you think have been the major couple of breakthroughs in the last year or two that really helped you kind of get where you are?
I'd say, you know, and I have to say this, 2007 was a tough year for me too. And this will probably not have anything to do with anybody else on the call, but for me, I'm still in therapy for my car accident.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I've been able to be more involved in this, on the floor, and able to do more. And but being off the floor gave me more time to review how our program was run, how we're scheduling everything, how we're evaluating all the students, and to kind of dial that in a little bit more to where I'm making sure every student is talked to during every single class by the instructor, and every single student is evaluated within a testing cycle, and that they feel that they are, you know, oh, wow, he knows my name. Oh, you know, they're paying attention to me. And it gave me a chance to be on the floor in the in the lobby talking to the parents.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
really connecting. And where I'm at now, you know, for the smaller schools, you're not going to be able to do this yet. But for me, I would like to see me be able to walk away from my school and go someplace and know my school's running at its peak performance and come back and not have to put fires out. And I've been running a leadership program here for, I think, 6 years now. And I've got some really great instructors from it. By being on the floor or being able to be in the lobby, looking from outside in, seeing what they're doing, and trying to improve the students, their experience, and watching my instructors, I was able to pick things out and try to improve on that. And that would probably be the best thing that's happened to me this year.
Yeah.
As far as the advertising, if I go into the advertising and all that, that's pretty dismal. This whole year has not been a good year. I did my numbers today, and my numbers this year are way off from last year. August, the worst month of the year, I had 22 new students. And I'm not that big of a school. It's not like I have five schools and it's, you know, a couple students from each school. That month, that year, I brought in a lot of students. This year, I think my August was only three students, I think at the best. And so I can't say the marketing has been the best. The other thing I think would been the best is getting into the Inner Circle group. Another thing that probably wouldn't have anything to do with anybody, but after my car accident, I had not traveled anywhere until January when I went to that first Inner Circle group meeting.
That's right.
And that was my first time I had traveled since the car accident. And I was going from that year before, I traveled 35 times. Now, I'm in the process of a lawsuit against the kid that hit me head on. And the other attorney asked one of the questions. They wanted me to write down all my training, what I did from 1998 up until present. And that's something that I never really did.
It
really surprised me to see what I actually had done each year. And I do want to make a point with this. You guys that are doing things, track it.
Yeah.
Write it down. Make files. Be organized about it so that you can pull that and you can look at that. A couple reasons. One is not so you can say, oh, look what I did, and be able to show it off, but you can do an evaluation on yourself. Where have you spent your time, your money, and what did you learn from that, and where do you need to improve? And that use that to figure out where you're getting your best education from.
Yeah.
And
let me stop you there for a second.
Sure.
Chuck, I want to reiterate something you just said and maybe have you expand on it. And then I want you to get back to this as well. First of all, let me form a thought here again. You were talking a little bit about the structure of your school as you started to observe it when you had the opportunity to extract yourself from the floor. And the second part you said was about now you're developing systems rather than, you know, like you said, putting out fires. And this, I think, is a huge lesson for any school owner that's listening. Number one is the best thing you can ever do for your school, and a term that you used, your student experience, is number one to start thinking about it, right? Start thinking about what a student experiences from the first day that they meet you all the way to their black belt. But the second thing is, you know, it's like you can't see the forest for the trees, right? And in many, 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 many cases, one of the best things you can do for your school is to take yourself out of yourself and actually what's going on, not what you think is going on or what you feel is going on. And, you know, your injury and your accident, as tragic as it is, as tragic as it was, sort of forced you to stand in the lobby and to talk to the parents more than maybe arguably you ever had before, and really sort of look through their eyes at the class and how things were happening. So if you can expand on that, maybe for a minute, because I really think that that's valuable. That was one of the best things that ever happened to me was I developed a really, really, really good chief of staff. And it allowed me to walk off the floor whenever I wanted to and sit down and just watch, you know, talk to the parents in the lobby and that sort of thing. So if you can expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the one very important thing that I know as myself being a, and I will never say this to my partner, a control freak, but the most important thing, and I know most martial artists, I've been doing this 30-some years, and I've been around a lot of high-level martial artists, and we're all the same. We're control freaks.
Yeah.
And to just let go and have my instructors take over was really difficult to do. This accident forced me into doing it. So, you know, that was probably, that for me to tell anybody on this line, that is something you've got to be able to do. You've got to let them fall on their face on the floor. You have to let them mess up. Couple times, and I was very strongly against this, and that is correcting the instructors on the floor in front of the students. I did do that a couple times, and which I knew not to, but it was just, oh my God, I can't believe you're doing this, you know, but you got to let them fall, and then you got to tell them afterwards.
And you know what, again, I don't want to derail you, but you just said something again that's really important. Chuck, you're fantastic, but one of the things is that the relationship you have with your students is very important, because if you have a really good relationship with your students and with your parents, you can have a trainee instructor running a class, and as long as they understand that they're a training instructor, it's okay if they make mistakes. It really is.
Exactly.
But they'll really forgive you. They really will. As long as they know, as long as the biggest death blow of a school is perception of apathy, you know, perceiving that you don't care. But what they will respond to is you letting an instructor go out there, make some mistakes, and then they sort of see that you're helping him adjust, and they're seeing that you're helping him improve. So as long as your relationship is good with the students, that's fine. And yours was absolutely wonderful. So I think that was a great lesson. That's a great lesson for everybody to learn too. So keep going. What did that allow you to see, being able to step off and talk to the customers, talk to the parents, and watch classes? What did that help you sort of encapsulate?
What the parents see, you know, as far as, okay, my son Johnny there standing there with his wrong foot in the front, and the instructor's not correcting him. What's wrong with that?
my kids not doing it right. Nobody's helping them, you know. And as a parent, you know, I want my kid to be able to do the best, and I want my kid getting attention. And I'm paying all this money for this class. I want my kid, you know, corrected. So, you know, and I have always taught my instructors to do the three rule, and that is you walk up to every single student three times in a class, you say their name, you praise, correct, praise, and you touch them. Give them five, pat on the back, or, you know, great job, before you walk away.
Yeah.
And what I did see was not all my instructors were doing that. So that was one thing I corrected, and, you know, just get them, remind them, that's all. They knew what they needed to do. They just needed reminded.
Yeah.
The other thing is to have a lot of different instructors, and we have 14 forms by the time they're brown belt testing for black belt. And obviously, you guys, martial artists, you know, each one of those forms probably have, you know, maybe 20, 50, 70 different techniques to orchestrate where every single instructor is teaching exactly the same thing in every single form, or their one steps, or their self-defense, or how they do their kicks, is really difficult to do.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing, that sitting back, watching the different instructors teach, I could see the differences in what they were teaching. And it helped me to correct that. And also, in the meantime, I developed where I scheduled every day today's forms, tomorrow's forms, the next day's one steps, then there's kicking, and, you know, everything's all scheduled out for what they're going to do. So that gave me a chance to look at that and say, okay, we need to structure this a little bit better. And I gave, and I got this from Master So out in Denver, Joe So. He uses pocket guides, and well, that's what I did. I took his idea. He said I can use it, and made up a sheet, 1 8.5 by 11 sheet of a brief overview of everything that student needs to do at that level, for every single level in there, and that tied in with the strike testing. It tied in with the curriculum schedule. Everything ties together now, and by doing that, I'm seeing better response as far as my students becoming better at each belt level at a quicker pace.
Right.
And I am a technician. I'm very, very strict with my students. I want the best students in the whole area. I've got people walking in the school, they're black belts, and they're nowhere near even as good as my green belts. You know, and to me, that's a shame. I want to be able to run my school and make money at it and have a decent-sized school, but not lose the quality of the students. I want them to be excellent martial artists. So, you know, that helped me with that. And the other thing that really made a big difference was me sitting out on the floor and getting to know the parents, just being around the parents. That in itself was probably the most valuable, although, you know, correcting all those things I corrected was very valuable. Being around those parents, talking to them, they really, I mean, it's going to be harder for them to quit when there's a friendship right there. And I try to keep a barrier between students and parents and myself to a certain degree. Because, you know, I'm a master crone. You walk into school, I'm master crone. There's got to be a hierarchy. But at the same time, you got to become friends with them. You've got to show them that you care. This was a conversation.
And you know, one of the things that we always use, you're kind of identifying that gray area, that line that you don't want to cross. And
right.
one of the ways we've always described that in our organization was friendly but not familiar.
Right, exactly.
So you're friendly with that person, but if they were having a birthday party at your house, they probably wouldn't be invited. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
You're friendly with them but not familiar. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Well, one of the other things that I do here,
and I missed one yesterday. I felt really guilty about it. I go to as many events as possible that my students are involved in.
Yeah.
Plays. Yeah. Yesterday I had a seven-year-old that was in a, he did a pianist recital. And it was at 3:15 yesterday. I never got out of school until 6:30. So
yeah.
I missed it. And which you can't get all, to all of them. But in my situation here, I have so many of my students are so involved in all the activities at the schools that I've got a lot of the school teachers are now involved in my school.
Yeah.
Their kids are here or they are students of mine. I have actually got teachers calling me and telling me about students. My one student, Jacob Mitchell, he's fantastic. He's one of the top guys on my demo team. And he was in jeopardy of failing phys ed. It's like, you got to be kidding me. Phys ed? This kid's unbelievable. He's a physical specimen. But that and chemistry, because he wasn't doing his homework.
Got it.
But the kid's intelligent. He aces all his tests. Well, the teachers called me and told me about it and asked me if I would talk to him. So I did, and you know, now he's doing his homework and so forth. So the rapport you build with the teachers, if you're producing great students and they are showing it at the school, at the public schools, that right there in itself is what's going to get your foot in the door if you have a school district that's difficult to get into. Because then you have the teachers that are going to be siding on for you. And
absolutely.
That's how you get in. You get in with the teachers, and then you go
yeah.
in from there.
Absolutely. And you know, what you're talking about, too, is, you know, one of Tom Peters' books, In Search of Excellence, talks about the emotional bank account.
Exactly.
And every relationship you have, there's a certain emotional bank account. And every time you damage that relationship, it's like a withdrawal from the account. And every time you strengthen that relationship, it's like making a deposit. And unfortunately, in many cases, every time you ask someone for money, it sort of damages the relationship a little bit. And what that means is you have to be making lots and lots and lots of deposits in order to make a little withdrawal of the emotional capital. And what you're talking about, you know, by showing up at the play and by sitting and talking to Mrs. Jones and answering her question when she has one, or, you know, those types of things, those are huge deposits in the emotional bank account. And really that's one of the reasons you're seeing a 1.5% attrition rate in your school. I mean, they feel like you said, it's more difficult to quit when you hit a road bump if you have a personal relationship with that person.
Let me add something
yeah, please.
As far as going to those events, and this is my personal experience, because of the numbers of students that are involved, they did a play here, Beauty and the Beast, and, I mean, it was phenomenal. When I stood out there, when they came out, all the characters, the people that were in a band or an orchestra and that were up on stage, I mean, this is a major, it looked like a professional production.
Right.
When they came out, all of them are going over to me saying, "Hi, Master Crone, give me hugs," and, you know, that kind of stuff. And now all those parents and stuff standing around, all those people are wondering who I was. And a couple of the teachers asked who I was, and a couple of the parents asked who I was. So, you know, here it is, all these kids off of that stage coming over and walking up and talking to me and, you know, really showing a lot, you know, bowing to me and saying, "Sir," and, you know, that type of stuff, and all these people see this.
Yeah.
That in itself is priceless.
Yeah, you can't overestimate the value of that. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Well, good. Well, you know what, Chuck, we're rapidly running out of time, but I wanted to cover a little bit more ground, a couple of more questions with you real quick.
Okay.
Number one was, so far I think that there's, you know, seven or eight lessons in what we've covered so far already that no matter what size of a school owner I am, if I'm part-time or full-time, if I'm on my own chief cook and bottle washer, or if I've got a staff of 60, I think I can take something away from this already. But since you're one of our Inner Circle members as well, I wanted you to talk about that a little bit. Let me just encapsulate my experience in just a second and ask you what yours has been so far. But one of the best things that's ever happened to me personally as an individual, as a human being, is I was very, very lucky to be surrounded by giants in my field about 10 years ago. I was in a different business, kind of an eclectic little business, and I fell in with the right people. And I was taken under the wing of a very successful individual in that business and was shown the business from the inside out. And I had the ability to accelerate my learning curve extremely quickly just because of that association and that experience. So I sort of had that, you know, group of peers around me that helped to support me. And now you are one of the key members of our mastermind group, the Inner Circle, which mostly is made up of very high performing martial arts schools, many good size schools like yourself, many very big schools, but all of which who want to increase and accelerate their results, but who already have good results already. So what so far has been your experience with the group? What have you gotten from it? What do you feel it's going to help you do in the future? What's your experience been like so far?
Well, first I'll say I think I just developed a whole bunch of new friends.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as a mastermind group like that, the knowledge in that room during the first meeting is just unbelievable. And I have picked up on, as far as marketing is concerned, which that's where our focus has been so far, a lot of different things. And yet I owned a commercial art business for 13 years. It was all about marketing, and I picked up a lot of stuff from the meeting. The group, the way we are getting, you know, as far as I think we're going to get along great. I think we're going to work really well together. I think we'll make a great team. I see, where I might have experience in one area, where an area I don't have experience, somebody else does. You know, maybe somebody else doesn't have the experience I have. The ability to brainstorm basically anything that we want to work on in the industry, there's just so much out that you can get out of that you will not get from, put it this way, I've been going to seminars for years and years, and out of all the things that I've been involved with, that meeting, that one weekend, I believe I walked away with a lot more than I have with any other meeting I've ever walked away from. And the length of the meeting, when I got there, I was sick. I had caught that virus that's going around here, and I'm not sure where all it is, but in Pennsylvania, I don't get sick. I never get sick. And I'll tell you what, I was in bed Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday, I came into school because I had to, because Thursday, I flew to Florida. And I coughed the whole time through those meetings, and they could have gone on for another 12 hours, and I wouldn't have minded. I would have loved it. I wish it could have been longer. The information I walked away with was invaluable, and I'm excited. I can't wait for the next one.
Absolutely. You know, one of the key things to kind of expand on that, too, is pretty much everybody in the group, like you said, they have very different skill sets and different things that they have, you know, tremendous experience with and other things that they need help with. And I think we have a pretty well-rounded group. And in addition to that, we've got a couple of million-dollar-a-year school owners. We've got several that are doing $875,000 a year. And someone in the $400,000-$500,000 a year stage, but everybody is very, very focused on growth. And one of the things I think that you can never overestimate the importance of is who you're surrounding yourself with on a daily basis. And you know, being an entrepreneur and being a business owner, we don't have a lot of. We're going to get cut off in 2 minutes. We don't have a lot of people in our daily life who think the way we think. And I think it's extremely important to start surrounding yourself by people who are going to, you know, hold you accountable for the things you say you're going to do, but also give you the roadmap and help you down that road so that you can experiment and learn and share experiences with each other. So I think that's fantastic.
You just said something that helped put that together. I didn't know how to explain it, but the roadmap. You're walking away with a roadmap. I walked away from there with a lot of instruction, a lot of detailed instructions of what to do. Not just, you know, you got 1 hour to put a seminar out, get that information out, then you're done. Okay, this was back and forth.
Yeah.
So, and the synergy of a group, like-minded people working together, is phenomenal. You just can't put a price on it.
It was fantastic. Well, Chuck, listen, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, it was fantastic. I think if I'm a school owner, regardless of the size or style of my school, I think I learned three or four things. So if you're a school owner today, and you haven't had the opportunity to step off the floor for a class, or for a class a week, or for two classes a day, or whatever it may be, make that happen. Right, make that happen immediately, because you're going to see things that you can't see when you're standing on the floor yourself. And I think that's a phenomenal lesson for everybody. If they don't do anything else, you know, find yourself the brown belt that's really good, or the black belt that's really good, and teach them how to teach a 20-minute class or 20-minute segment of the class, and extricate yourself from the floor so you can really see what's going on.
Hey, can I add something real quick I didn't add? My instructors, I require that they write up curriculum for a whole class. This is a weekly thing, so I can see where with their head, and that helps develop those instructors.
Yeah, absolutely, and then they own it too. They feel good about the class because they designed it. So
and they have a manual.
Well, Chuck, really appreciate your time. I know we're going to speak more really soon.
All right, thank you very much, Toby. You take care.
Thanks, Chuck. Speak to you soon.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye.